Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good middle of the night, wherever you may find yourself around the world. Welcome back to DevelopPods. Thanks so much for joining us once again. And today, I welcome to the virtual studio Lucy Norris. Now, Lucy and I, I'll tell you for the sake of transparency, used to work together in the mid-2000s, and we are now good friends. Lucy works in the field of education and language teaching as an independent consultant, writer, and professional development facilitator, mostly at the moment supporting Erasmus Plus funded primary and secondary EU CLIL subject teachers and language teachers, as well as training and CPD in mobile pedagogy and what she terms principled technology use in language learning. So Lucy's professional interests include mobile and digital learning, creativity, drama, CLIL, and multilingual approaches to learning. Welcome, Lucy Norris. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you, Christian.
So how are you involved in teacher development at the moment, Lucy, and what groups of teachers are you currently working with?
Well, at the moment, I'm mainly working with EU-funded Erasmus Plus groups of teachers from all over Europe and a few other places, but people who are working at primary school or secondary school in the state sector. So those might be language teachers involved in a periphery way in CLIL or bilingual, or full-on language teachers doing technology or mobile pedagogy.
Thanks. I think that's something different from what we've generally looked at on DevelopPod. I know you've contributed recently to the IATEFL and British Council World Teachers Day online conference. Your webinar title, Teaching for Success, Establishing a Culture of Continuing Professional Development, is what we're looking at today in particular. And could you give us a little bit of background about that project?
Yes, of course. Are you familiar with the British Council Professional Development Framework?
I am indeed, yes.
Okay, so I don't know if everyone of the listeners probably is, but I'm thinking it's a good idea just to list the 12 areas that are selected for those that teachers need to think about. And that ranges from more practical skills like understanding learners, managing the lesson, planning lessons and courses, and knowing your subject, as well as through to assessing learning, integrating technology, taking responsibility for your professional development, inclusive practices, multilingual approaches, promoting 21st century skills, and understanding educational policies and practices. So Teaching for Success has lots of modules for self-development, but this particular part of the project was to write together with a team based on quite comprehensive research into the areas that teachers in the Global South particularly, but teachers elsewhere, identify as being the most difficult for them. So the British Council decided that it would be a good idea to scaffold professional development by using groups of colleagues or scaffolded by teacher educators or directors of studies or whoever it would be in those situations. These guides could be studied one by one or they can all be studied together. But yeah, the idea is for teacher developers to use them to help teachers through action research, lesson planning, and all components of what it means to be a teacher.
And at what level may teachers and teacher educators use these guides? As I understand, it's as varying levels, right?
Yes. Now, level always makes us think about proficiency, and in a way, I guess it is. But when we think about stages of development, we've got awareness, which is the level at which we've written these guides. And so that means really that you've heard of this professional practice, but maybe not much more. Now, elsewhere, stages of development can go through to understanding, engagement, and integration. And at the integration level, you demonstrate a level of competency throughout your professional practice, and it consistently informs what you do at work. But I'm sure we're all at different stages of development in different areas. So for some people, using multilingual approaches, for example, they may not have heard of it, in which case they'd be at awareness level. And perhaps in another area, like knowing the subject, people are fully integrated. So we're all a mix of the different levels, I guess. Rather than levels, let's think about them as stages of development, perhaps.
Okay. And you spoke, I believe, in your recent webinar about spirals of development. Yeah. So that a teacher or teacher educator may be at one level, let's say in integration, and after a while may need to revise and refresh in a certain area. So they may well drop back to awareness or some level between awareness and integration. So if, as I understand it, even though these were originally designed for relatively inexperienced teachers, they can be used by a whole range of teachers and teacher educators. Is that right?
That's right. And in my work over the last year or so that I've been involved in the project, I have tried out and been motivated to change things according to very experienced teachers that I'm working with, who may be absolutely fantastic in most areas, but for example, they're having problems with 21st century skills or integrating technology or even multilingual approaches. So as a good example, many of us will remember the day, and maybe people listening will still be in the situation where the policy at school will be English only. Mm-hmm. So they may not have heard at all about using multilingual approaches for language learning or for learning, yes, in general. So even teachers who have been teaching for sort of 20 plus years may find, hang on, the world's changed a bit. You know, what is this particular area to me? So yeah, they'd go, right, world's changed, my learners have changed, my context has changed, perhaps even, you know, my job's changed. The people I work with usually have a job for life. So once you get into a state school education system in many European countries and many countries in the world, there isn't necessarily the same obligation for people to develop professionally, although most teachers do and they see the clear awareness for it.
How may, let's say, language teachers to begin with benefit from engaging with these materials? And I'd like to stress that they're free, as I understand, that's right?
They are. They're open educational resources, and we hope they'll be downloaded and used widely, even outside the context for which they were originally developed. So as we were writing them, we were thinking about contexts where you might have massive classes. There may not even be any classroom walls or a classroom floor, and there may be nothing. So we're talking zero resource contexts right through to maybe much higher and teched up contexts.
Okay, so teachers in all contexts, how may teachers, whatever variety, benefit from these free online resources?
I don't know if you know, most teachers I've worked with are quite aware of the term action research, but not necessarily sure about how it works.
I think it's a scary term for most teachers that I've come across.
It definitely is. And so this is really the approach for the guides, that in the first section, you know, you would choose the different parts that were suitable for you. So you might look at, let's say, using multilingual approaches and choose, okay, well, I'll work with this bit. And in the first section of the book, teachers would be encouraged to think about what other teachers have had problems with, issues or stories like case studies, and they'd refer it and reflect back to their own teaching context. Having thought a bit about that, the next section is much more input based, so they have to think about what they know and do some reading, do some tasks. And that's the basis of the action research section, which suggests that either alone or with a group of teachers from the same school or other friends and colleagues elsewhere, they would choose an activity or a task usually that's from the B section, or the think about what you know. So that suggests practical activities for you to try out in the class. And there is a hugely sort of step-by-step guide to how you might include that in your planning. Okay. And then the idea is that teachers take that into at least one class or a series of lessons, or how they would like to do it. But most of the time it would be one class, one lesson, or a series of lessons with the same class. Try out doing something a different way and gather data or evidence, which may be notes, it may be reflections from the learners, it may be posters, it may be recordings even, you know, still pictures or audio or video recordings. But the rich thing about this is asking learners how they feel about what it is you're researching. So if it's, for example, classroom decision making, and we're thinking about empowering learners to make more choices, learners will be asked to give feedback in their own language, suggesting to the teacher that they've got 30, 40, depending on how many learners they work with, maybe 100 pieces of evidence, finding out, well, what do learners feel about that? So it's not only the teacher's own perceptions, it's the learners that they've tried out the strategy with.
Okay, that gives us more of a flavour of what the guides, the self-access guides, are about. I understand, it's partly input-based, but it's mostly around reflection, experimentation, and collaboration using these guides as a framework.
Exactly, it's all of those. So although there is input, so if you happen to be a teacher in a school on your own and you didn't have any colleagues to work with, you were quite remote, then it's perfectly possible to work through it yourself. But the idea is that based on input, and there's a section at the back with lots of resources and further places to look or to watch a video or to read, with, again, open resources online. And yes, the idea is that it's much more fun when you work together in a group and you learn. And learning in groups is more fun. So the idea is that one or two teachers, three or four, whoever it is, they'd all be in on it together. And it would stimulate and prompt people to reflect on, well, it worked quite well on Tuesday with this class, but not so well with this. And why might that be? And finding out from other teachers their own experiences will lead to, hopefully, a school taking something on board as a department. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. You recently, during the webinar that you did, conducted an online poll. You had about 300 participants, as I recall. And the most popular area seemed to be planning for lessons and courses, that particular self-study guide, which is one of the 12. Is that something that you think that most teachers need to focus on, or is it just that perhaps they think that might be the most relevant, but actually they may need to focus on other areas more, their blind spots perhaps? Something like perhaps using inclusive practices, or perhaps integrating ICT, that they may shy away from.
Yes, I mean, you've said it all there. Basically, it's probably down to what stage of their career or developmental awareness an individual teacher is. And most teachers quite like the practical. And so their own perception may well be that while they were okay, they might need more help in those areas that seem to give most benefit. But yes, perhaps it's their educators or their sort of superiors who might need to prompt them towards looking at another area.
So that leads us into those perhaps teacher educators who may be providing some mentorship or some guidance or some management to the teachers. How might these teacher educators use these materials to help scaffold CPD?
Well, I hope there'll be a very, very rich resource, particularly for teacher educators or developmental facilitators, anyone who's in a role of managing teachers and helping them to think about areas of development, because they can tell teachers to read the sections A, read the sections B, have a look, and consider before they make the best use of their time when they're face-to-face or in an online situation. So it's quite good for I guess, a hybrid pedagogy or flipped learning or blended learning, because there's parts that teachers can take responsibility for doing themselves, and the tasks are all in there. So it's quite hard to come up with good reflection tasks, especially based on your own work. And then maybe areas that teachers need their eyes opening to. And in those questions, if they're prompted by their teacher developers to specifically come to the next meeting prepared to share the evidence they've got from their classrooms or share their questions, it will scaffold a more fruitful and productive professional conversation together, because we're not focusing on the personal. And many of the reflections are, you know, how did learners respond to that? What's your evidence? How do you know? So we're asking simple techniques, like at the end of a class, learners will be asked to complete an exit ticket, so an anonymous answer to a question. So the teacher will then have all of those exit slips, and they will be able to say, right, so from the teaching that I did this week, blah, 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 you know, and they've got something that's not quite so personal. It's not based on their performance. It's based on their relationship and their pedagogy with their learners.
Yeah, it sounds like it's more skewed towards the evidence-based and away from that evaluative approach that teachers can shy away from, particularly in observations, classroom observations. As soon as we're zooming in and focusing on the learners, then it takes away that personal element, I think.
Yeah, and actually asking the learners how they feel, what made the biggest difference to them. So you're actually asking learners to input for future lessons. And even just doing that might be a change in pedagogy that we all need. But I do feel that we sometimes pay lip service to learner-centered. But if we don't include them in any of the choice or decision-making or feedback, you know, depending on the environment, some teachers can be quite worried about asking learners what they feel.
Mm-hmm. To make it more concrete, can you give us an example of a particular action research task that's designed for this collegial approach to professional development?
Yes. So let's say, for example, you've got a staff room situation where colleagues are sitting down planning the next few lessons or a series of lessons. So one of the tasks might be to think, well, as we're planning, what choices do we give learners? You know, what decisions could we share with them? And so it starts at the planning stage, and there are suggestions for making one or two tweaks. So colleagues can decide, well, in this lesson, I'll give learners the choice about who they work with or how they work. Something simple like seating or interaction, or who's the one that's going to be recording the new words or the new language chunks that come up. So it's giving a series of choices, asking teachers to choose 2, 3, 4 and try these out, ones that are new for them, so that the next time they come in to discuss together, saying, well, that worked a treat, asking them to decide if they wanted to write or record their answers in an audio, or did they want to make a book, did they want to make, you know, so it's giving them the option to display evidence of their language use in different formats. So just by empowering, especially with younger learners and teenagers, if they feel they're responsible for, okay, I'd like to make a video, you'd like to make an audio, that's fine. But giving them choice, I think, is something that can be, you know, quite hard. And so scaffolding it in this way, in tiny steps, planning for teachers to come back together again, and then saying, well, you know, what do you reckon the reason was behind that? You know, why did that work so well? Gosh.
And then presumably they can go back after that discussion with their peers and refine it and continue with the action research.
They can, yeah, and make a plan to say, you know, really sharing responsibility and sharing decision making with your learners is one way to really hand over to them. And we try to inculcate autonomy and independent learners, or independent learning. But for in many cultures and situations, that's not always how the society works there, or how the culture of the school works. So by empowering teachers to make experiments or experimental sort of observing things in their own classroom, it might give them a sort of window on not my teaching, but their learning or our learning, and being co-learners and co-teachers with colleagues is something I think we can all benefit from.
I agree. To flip that a little bit, as you say, in some contexts, it may not be usual for students to take on autonomous learning. And in some contexts, equally, it may be the same for teachers. There's been an emphasis for the last generation or so, I think, on a continuing professional development and self-sustainable, taking ownership of that teacher development oneself. What do you think perhaps are the main challenges for the teachers in different parts of the world to do that?
Well, we're not going to go into the sort of the trauma, and there are certainly a lot of trauma going on in things like places where there's been a movement of people from area to area, and children are going to schools that are packed at the seams, and they may not have the same language groups. And a teaching and learning community doesn't just stop with the teachers and the learners, it's also the parents and so on. So I think people are dealing with difficult lives, not very much pay, maybe not much support or development, maybe no resources. Some of the teachers that we've been working with can't even rely on electricity. Some of them don't have enough chairs for students. So there's a very big range of contexts. But sometimes developing ourselves is the last thing in our brains when we're worried about delivering, I don't like that word, but delivering the curriculum that the government says that we have to. So getting through all of the things that teachers need to do. That's often the reason why people are blocked, because they're just so stressed with what they see as day-to-day tasks.
And that could be equally true in resource-rich environments as well, but
precisely.
So let me ask a simpler question. Why do you feel that taking ownership of professional development is important for an individual teacher?
I think taking ownership of something means rattling it around a little bit and thinking, well, do I want to keep doing the same thing in the same way if it's not working as well as I want it to? So by taking ownership, it just means exploring, examining, thinking about your practice, and hopefully these guides will give people practical tools that will make them feel better about their teaching. So I think a lot of people want to be reassured that they're doing things in the right way.
So it's about confidence building.
Yes, I think it's awareness building and confidence building. And when you feel it's not all up to me, that you know, it's a joint effort, that we can all be involved. So that sort of collegiate approach to development is exactly the same way as the sort of collegiate approach to learning. In many, many places, in schools, in both rich and poor environments, you've got rows of teachers looking at a board or a wall with a teacher standing at the front, even though, as you talked about, maybe I think two generations or three generations, we've been trying to say group work, collaborative learning, this is what we want. So even making a simple change like, okay, we can do that, I think will empower teachers to focus on what they can do best.
Thank you. We'll of course provide the link to these self-access resources online, and the link to your recent webinar, which was very interesting. As I understand, there was a little incident along the way. Is that right?
My memory of it is that I went totally blank because all my script got burnt and then soaked because I had a tranquility candle burning, thinking that would help me feel calm and focused. And I'd prepared probably too hard, and I had scripted the webinar, and I had them all on separate pieces of paper with my statue of the goddess of wisdom and a crystal. And there it happened. Each one I read, and I sort of abandoned it to the side. And then I could smell something. I was so busy trying not to look at the notes and to look at the camera, to look at where I thought people might be looking, that all I could do was smell this horrible smell. And then I realized there was burning. So the glasses of water I had by my side to drink then put the fire out. And then I realized I had no script, so I had to go off-piste, as it were. And in a way, that was probably better.
Lucy, you were professionalism personified. I saw the webinar and you gathered yourself incredibly quickly. Had you not said there was a fire at the one side, one wouldn't have known. So thank you for that. As I understand, there are 9 publications, self-guides available.
There's 12. There will be 12. There are some still in the pipeline going through the last minute changes.
Okay, yeah. So there will be 12, but we'll provide a link here. Thanks a million for joining us, Lucy.
It's been a pleasure.
Hello there. Your friendly neighborhood coordinator, Tyson Seaburn, here with a couple of TDSIG updates for you. The biggest of which is our pre-conference event at the IATEFL conference in Manchester next April. You may have noticed our superhero underdog logo across our social media platforms. And if you haven't, you just need to look for a very colorful origami pup, which represents the theme of Outside the Hub, Underdog Forms of Teacher Development. We're showcasing 4 speakers on the day from France, North Macedonia, Canada, and Japan, who are sharing their bottom-up, teacher-driven, sustainable TD activities or programs with us. Their talks will be mixed in with our TDSIG-style open space group discussion with each speaker about localizing to your context and anything else you want to talk to them about. Secondly, do you want to or know someone who is thinking about becoming an IATEFL member, but not quite sure if it's the best fit for you? We've thought about you. We've got 6 individual memberships to give away to anyone who's not a current IATEFL member. All you need to do is, by December 6th, tell us about someone who's inspired you a lot in your professional development. Speaking of local, we're also figuring out ways to connect with local communities, the first event of which will be in Toronto in December or January. We're going to get a group of us together and have a topical ELT discussion every few months, sort of like a book club discussion group. And swinging back to the IATEFL conference in Manchester, finally, we're getting the first drafts of articles from the authors for our inaugural volume of the TDAJ, our Teacher Development Academic Journal, which will be open access and published for the conference in Manchester. So for more information about any of these projects, please visit our website at tdsig.org.